This is a digital recording of the Academic Senate of November 10th, 2011.
I'm reminded every time this year of how much students wish that the entire week of Thanksgiving was not classes, and I want to remind the faculty that Monday and Tuesday of Thanksgiving week, classes are held, and don't believe the students when they tell you that all their other faculty are canceling classes on Monday and Tuesday. So conversations about Sonoma State's academic story continue. We've had five or six lunches and several breakfasts, and they're great conversations that are expanding. Yesterday we had a great lunch with the Associated Students Cabinet, which was a great conversation. Some wonderful insights about why students come here, what makes SSU distinctive in their eyes, and some ideas about what makes for a successful college experience for them. So there's one breakfast and two lunches left this semester. I hope you and your colleagues can come. And then the last thing I want to report about is the alternative consultation process for the student center fee, which wrapped up last week. And as one of the two faculty members on the fee advisory committee that oversaw that process, I want to tell you about it from my perspective. I hoped that the fee advisory committee would be an easy gig this year, but that didn't happen. So the committee spent the month of October conducting this alternative consultation process, which is outlined in Executive Order 1054, as requested by the President. So building on some format suggestions from an associated student discussion, the committee designed a process with three distinct input mechanisms. There were three open invitation dialogues, three representative random focus groups, and three student leadership group discussions. For Associated Students, the Student Union Corporation, and the Residential Student Association. The open invitation dialogues were facilitated by Margaret Anderson, from faculty member in the Hutchins School and director of the Hutchins Dialogue Institute. A total of 39 students participated in those. The invitations went out via email to all students at their CWOP email. I was most involved in the focus group process, so I want to describe that process briefly and my impressions of the discussions. So for the focus groups, the fee advisory committee decided to hold three focus groups, one each for first-time freshmen and junior transfers, for students who were new to campus this semester, continuing freshmen, sophomores, and juniors, and seniors and graduate students. And each of those groups is approximately one-third of the student body. And the in the email that Senator Cabanas sent around, you could read a more thorough description of the process that we used to send out the invitations for these focus groups. But basically, we sent out invitations to groups that were matched the representation of the campus along gender, ethnicity, and financial need lines to try to garner these focus groups. In the end, we had to end up sending around 1,000 invitations to garner 28 participants at the three focus groups. The representation at the focus groups very closely matched SSU's demographics in ethnicity and financial need, not so closely in gender. Males were more heavily represented in the focus groups than they are in the SSU population. But that's almost entirely due to the senior and graduate focus group, which was 10 men and one woman. And so the other two were more closely representative of the student body. The focus groups, I was present at all of them as a note taker and observer, and my impression of the focus groups was that the conversation, the predominance of feelings was primarily negative towards the fee, on the order of 70% or so at those three focus groups. In the email that Senator Cabanas sent around, you can read the notes from the focus groups, the dialogues, and the student leadership organizations taken as a whole. I don't want to try to summarize what all of those. I'll let you read those summaries yourself and get a feel for your yourself with the entire dialogue. But I want to mention this, the most significant potential source of bias in this focus group process was the very low response rate. When we had to send out that many invitations to get that few responses, run the risk of over-representing strong feelings in either direction. So you would expect, typically, people with stronger feelings about an issue to respond at a higher rate than those without strong feelings. And so that's a potential source of bias in this process, which the president will have to take into account in interpreting the results of all of the, well, of the focus groups and of the dialogues, which were both subject to this non-response bias. So I think that's a summary of the process, and I think that concludes my report. So I'm happy to take questions.
So I understand the response bias and the strong feelings. Is there any reason to believe that those who responded because they felt strongly that there was any bias in that?
I
was biased toward one strong response.
Not without additional research to try to understand whether feelings are stronger on one side of this issue than another. Senator Hess? I don't know if anybody who does social science research wants to try to answer that. Senator Badabi?
I think because they were focus groups, it's not statistical anyway. It's all qualitative data. I understand the concerns that you're talking about in terms of who responded to the invitation. But there is no statistical significance that there wasn't a statistical test. My understanding.
I think that's correct. Yes, we did not run any statistical significance tests on anything. Senator Bass.
Usually the city advisory committee made a recommendation that I understand that we didn't respond to
that. But the advisory committee decided to pass on the results of all of the consultation processes directly to the president without an attached recommendation. And in the executive order, there is, in the discussion of the alternative consultation process, there is not an explicit instruction for the key advisory committee to make such a recommendation. There is language at other points in the executive order about the role of the key advisory committee being to, one of the roles being to make recommendations to the president. The committee decided that in this case that referred to the recommendation of how to conduct the alternative consultation policy, not how to interpret it. More questions for me? All right, so we'll move on to the approval of the agenda. And Senator Estrada?
I'd like to ask that initial item be added to the agenda, resolution from ABC endorsing Senator Medina's resolution on the discussion of the Facebook online initiative.
So this is at your place. And came from the APC meeting today. So is there any objection to adding that to today's agenda? Seeing none. Any other changes to the agenda? Are there any reports that would like time certain to make sure we get to them? Okay. Any objection to approving the agenda with the addition of the endorsement of the San Bernardino resolution? None, that's approved. So, on to minutes. We have two sets of Senate minutes that need to be approved. There's minutes from October 13th and October 27th. So, let's talk about October 13th first. Any corrections or amendments to those minutes? Senator Sangas.
I just already sent some minor corrections to the rule directly, so we discussed.
Okay. So, typos we'll take without discussion. Senator Brown?
Yeah, I did the same, but I thought I found the funny, like, for you to say something about ritual hazing of our executive committee.
No, he said
it.
Okay, sorry.
That's in the next Saturday.
He said it.
So any corrections to the October 13th minutes? So maybe you're all just hoping this is actually true, but it does state the minutes from October 13th, and in discussing the executive order about having to verify internship and independent study locations, things like that, it says that a member noted that the new executive orders promoted creating internships abroad in warm, inviting climates with long, cool local drinks and intoxicating flowers. So,
That was said. I think the long, cool drinks and intoxicating flowers.
That's
a guilty number as far as I remember.
Yes. So we'll correct Terry's statement to what he actually said. Any other corrections to the October 13th minutes? All right, any objection to approving those? Okay, so October 13th is approved. And then October 27th, the comment that Senator Brannon found was actually something that Senator Galinsky said. So, feeling a little bitter about that ritual hazing, I think. any other corrections to October
27th?
All right. Any objection to approving those minutes? All right. Those are approved. I received no correspondence that I can think of, nothing of note, besides 150 emails a day, but yes. And so a couple of notes for today. Let's see. On the agenda, the Senate meeting of December 15th doesn't appear, and it should. So don't think we canceled one on you. It's December 15th is the last Senate meeting of this semester. And we have a new member of the Senate today, Senator Robison from the Department of Business Administration is the new lecturer senator, and he'll have a name next meeting. So we got that. All right. So I think we will go on to the first business item. Let's do business item number one, revision to priority registration policy. So Senator Mondavi.
This change to the priority registration policy should be relatively straightforward. There have been some new education code changes that we need to make sure are reflected in our priority registration policy. So there are actually two. One is just a name change, so we're in the policy to change disabled student services to reflect the current name, disability services for students. The more substantive changes are adding category E to the priority list, which is members of the armed services as described in the policy, as well as category F, priority registration for foster youth and former foster youth. And this is, like I said, education code. So we're just making our policy consistent with the law.
Senator Sinhaus.
Given that all we're trying to do is be legal, and there doesn't seem to be any, sort of paradigm shifts going on in here, I would like to move that we waive the first reading.
Moved and seconded to waive the first reading. This this is discussable, so is there any discussion on waiving the first reading? All those in favor?
I have a question. If I've been personal speakers, which you might or might not have decided to do that, there are some changes that I think need to be made here, and I'm happy and ready to make those amendments. But there's some things I'm not sure this is actually the biggest in compliance with the law. If we deal with this as a first reading and let staff go back and look to verify or review what I think needs to be changed, then it's just we're not moving forward. If you want to take a chance on my reading of the law,
So, Senator Madavi, do you know if there's a particular time sensitivity to getting this approved?
No, I don't think so. I think they're actually, at least in the registrar's office who brought this to Student Affairs Committee, is already applying to these mandates. But what changes?
Okay, Senator Lutton.
As a general rule, I think we should be very cautious about waiving first readings unless something is very urgent or very trivial. And I don't believe this qualifies as either of those.
Any more discussion of waiving the first reading? All right. All those in favor of waiving the first reading, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
No.
Okay. Noes have it. That requires 2/3. The noes have it. And so we're still on a first reading. Back to the speaker's list. Secretary Beeson.
At the executive committee, for reasons I'm probably too embarrassed to elaborate on, the staff chair invited me to actually go look at the law to see what it read. And so there was one change I think is relatively minor, but the law does actually spell out what counts as armed forces members or former members of the armed forces or state military reserve, and this is the branches that count. And I guess that exclusion would. Other things that somebody might think count doesn't. So I was just going to suggest adding into this category E as armed forces or of the United States or state military reserve, something like as defined in Higher Education Code 66025.8. Again, within those particular branches. Now, the more pertinent thing, I think, is that in my reading of this, it looked like the addition of the armed forces to the priority group was actually made a number of years ago, like in 2008, and reads as it is in September of this year. The law was changed by SB 813 to extend that period from 2 years to 4 years. The Boston Children's thing also repeals as of January 1st, 2017, unless another act extends it, but I don't think we necessarily need to deal with it at this point.
More comments? Senator Fadas?
I just have a couple of questions. First, who is on, or where does the Priority Registration Committee reside? And Student Affairs? And Student Affairs? Is this a committee?
Yes.
Okay. And secondly, under Category C, it talks about students who are in ongoing university sanctioned activity that significantly benefits the university. It does see section 3.2 for eligibility, but I don't see section 3.2, but maybe I'm just missing it. And also, if we just give an example of what that is, what would be one of those students.
I'm sorry, I don't want to discuss that because I wasn't making any changes to that part of the policy. I can look into it.
I suggest as long as we've got the policy open, it would make sense if there's a reference to a section that doesn't exist, it's a good time to fix that. So maybe you can take that back. Senator Barsher.
Is it possible, in a brief, in a nutshell, what were the reasons or the logistics for giving priority registration to the I don't want to get
caught in the state education tool. It's in the law. In the state of California, it's law.
And any reason for it, why it's not discussed at all?
Okay.
Secretary Lee.
It looks like to me that 3.2 is now Roman numeral 3, letter D, just for a reason.
Past Chair Winkers.
In section 2E, I think it's a typo unless I'm reading it wrong. Shouldn't that say students who are members or former members of the Armed Forces of the United States, yada yada, who have received an honorable discharge, a general discharge, or other than dishonorable discharge?
Probably.
Not actually, no.
Other than honorable is a type of discharge,
yes,
right?
Yeah.
Gotcha, okay, I understand.
Yeah.
Other than
I
Any other comments, questions for clarification, suggestions for improvement? All right. So we'll have this one again in 2 weeks. And thank you. Let's do a couple of reports. President Parmignano, would you like to make a report?
Going back to the alternative consultation process, I did receive it. My interpretation of it is that that process basically corroborated the results of the prior referendum, where about 59% of the voters were in favor of increasing the fee, and 41% are opposed. Based upon that interpretation, I have recommended that we will proceed. I have recommended to the Chancellor to proceed with the increase of the fee as stated. And that will continue. Item two is beginning to filter out that we probably will encounter about a $9 billion deficit in the next year's budget. It's creeping to that point. But we still do not know when, how, or if the $100 million trigger be pulled. We expect that we will know that sometime in mid-December, and at least and be clear if it's one time or on ongoing basis, probably not until the governor's budget in mid-January. The crystal ball continues to be budgeted. That's all I have.
Questions for President Parmignano? Senator Lutman?
Going back to the first issue, some people have been concerned about the amount of debt that this campus would take on by issuing bonds for the Student Center. I wonder if you can comment on these concerns and whether we would indeed be over the specified limits on
we will debt. Not be. We are at the appropriate amount of guidelines on the debt, especially when we have the revenue sources identify and clarify to pay them appropriate level.
I remember a few years ago when the students at San Francisco State first filed a lawsuit against the CSU for retroactively raising fees, that I believe the position of the CSU was they were setting money aside in case they lost. And now that the courts have allowed it to proceed, lawsuit to proceed, which they did last week, is my memory right? I mean, have we got money set aside if we lose the lawsuit to the students on retroactive pay?
I don't think we set aside. And I don't know that for a fact. The answer is I don't know.
Okay.
I do not, but my recollection is that we did not set aside that amount of money in case that the courts ruled against the CSU.
Senator Hess.
Yeah, I just have a couple of questions. The first one is I don't really know.
know how this works, but it seemed like if the consultation survey was 70% of the students saying they didn't want the teaching, then I'm not sure.
The focus needs to be precise about a focus group. There were other groups in the consultation process who were not in that measure.
That
ASI
one.
I couldn't hear you.
Nothing. I had another question related to these, and that was, I was talking with Provost about this, but just wondering, I noticed that with the fee for CAPS, that I understand that raising like, I don't know, $800,000 a year, and the salary for the counselor there at CAPS for 3 years was $47,000. So I'm just wondering how the rest of that being distributed.
Sorry, I have a cold, so I have a funny voice. Ruben said it's the quietest he's ever heard me in the last few years. I think you might vote that I keep it. That money is also being used to hire the other full-time permanent counselors as well as the OE budget. We have a whole budget that that we presented, and I'd be happy to share it with you or anybody who would like to see it, where each of those dollar amounts is going in.
Senator Madison. Senator Bass.
Okay, I have two questions. They're unrelated. The first is on the fee advisory committee alternative consultation, and that is, you said there were other groups that were consulted besides the focus groups and the dialogue groups, and it seems to me that consulting the Sonoma Student Union Board or Student Union Corporation, they were already partners in the student center, so I would think that that would be kind of a foregone conclusion of the positive response that they would give. And the other was the Associated Students Incorporated, which I believe are also partners. And on their homepage, they have a picture of the plan, a picture of the new student union with their logo on it. So I would assume they were already in favor of it. So I don't kind of understand how you consult the partners in the student center and consider that equivalent to the focus groups and the dialogue. Should I agree with answer to that, or should I answer to ask my second question? Unrelated to the students, the alternative consultation.
Why don't you go ahead with the other one as well?
My second question is, at the last Affirmative Action Committee of the CFA, they passed out a form, which I've never seen, called the Free Speech Notification Form, and it's dated September 26, 2011, so it's fairly recent. And it's basically a form that someone has, I'm not even sure who has to fill out in order to be on campus, perhaps, but it has to be signed by Dan Condren. And I'm just wondering, who approved this form? Did it go through any kind of faculty consultation? That's my second question.
So, President Armagnano, what's up?
On the first question, on the second question, I don't know the process. On the first question, the policy calls to consult with the affected groups. The three organizations you spoke about are representatives of the students. That's what you have to consult with, regardless of what their position might have been. And obviously, if you read their report, there was not a unanimous in favor of it either. I mean, it was, again, pretty well split in that sort of 59-41%. That level of discipline that you attribute to this organization simply do not exist.
Right. Senator Byrne.
Thank you. President Armagnano, I know that there's been some discussion of the groups other than the focus groups, of course, ASI would be among those. Again, what were those other groups aside from focus groups and ASI?
The student union board and the residents, the student resident advisor group organization, whatever. The RSA association represents the residential
schools. So the resident, the third group, is that of the RSAs?
Yes.
Thank you.
Senator Sands. Pass. More questions for President Armagnani? Right. We'll move on. Let's let Provost Rogerson, would you like to make a report?
I'd like to announce two searches that will be occurring in the spring that will need some faculty input on, so I'll just announce them and let the process unfold. We are searching for the Dean of Science and Technology. And we're looking for a VP of Student Affairs.
Vice President of Student Affairs.
Now, the Dean of Education will be in the fall, so this is just for the spring. Dean of Education needs to finish the accreditation process before we proceed with that. We have it planned in the fall of 2012.
Other questions for the Provost? Yes?
Could you briefly go into the 16-minute cap that's going on in registration in the spring?
Briefly? Okay. The risk of confusing everyone, this is the plan for registration as we have it at the moment. And remember, the reason we have this plan is we want to firstly distribute the unit load across all our students, not just the seniors, to give our freshmen a chance to get some classes. We also want our students to prioritize the classes to sign up for. And we also want to try and hold down the total unit load because there are some budgetary concerns as we go into the spring. We are at 107.5% of the campus, and we will be fined if we're over 103 on an annualized basis. So the plan then is task one will be 9-unit undergraduate load. The unit load, by the way, for our post-baccalaureates and graduate students is 18 all the way through. But for undergraduates, we'll have Pass 1 at 9, Pass 2A will be 12, Pass 2B will be 16, and then open registration will stay at 16, except for seniors who will be allowed to go up to 20. Now, all of this, of course, is subject to petition, and we can't open up more classes if the demand is really there. But we're hoping by easing in this sort of strategy, we'll try to get students to really consider what they take, and perhaps they'll be comfortable with the 16-unit rule.
More questions for the Provost?
You said the seniors will be allowed to take 20 units. Do they have to petition to be able to take 20 units?
No, they'll be allowed to take 20 units.
Okay.
We'll open up. In open registration, seniors will be allowed to take 20.
Senator Rossford.
I'm sorry, this is a point of clarification. I might have misheard you. But you said that one of the two hires is going to be for the Vice President of Student Affairs Enrollment Management?
No.
No.
Vice President of Student Affairs.
Of Student Affairs within the Academic Affairs Division.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
No. She's the vice president of the first time enrolled in management.
Oh, it is?
Yeah.
Oh.
She's it's the same position that is occupied.
Okay, search for a permanent position.
Right,
that's. Okay, that's right.
That's
just
that. Here's a long time.
Thank you.
I didn't know Matthew
had
a touch of grand title. They also get papers.
Senator Watt.
Just a comment more than a question. I think with regard to the unit limits through registration, with more and more students going to, or more and more departments going to 4-unit and even 5-unit classes in a lot of cases, for a lot of science students having a 9-unit cap rather than 10, which we did, I know, once a year or two ago, for the first pass, makes a huge difference, that just that 1 unit. So just a comment for future consideration. Rather than
I think with every iteration of this plan, not mankind, I just want to stress that there's a lot of wiggle room, shall we say, in it. But it really is important. We will have to give back the fee money if we go over 103%, so we will be teaching students for free. We're not bluffing this year.
Senator
Pickman.
I'm not sure if this is going to get, what is the schedule going to go up? Right, because I have students who are coming in and have keep my fingers crossed over the courses for the directors of the study program. So I'm kind of hoping and praying, giving us time for advising the Thanksgiving week, the Red Star, or any kind of project next week. So is it going to be Monday?
Yes. Okay. I look to my learned committee back here.
14.
Great. All right. Any more questions? Oh, Senator Washer.
Are there any plans to address the current inequity with regards to full-time temporary faculty payment structure, where full-time means teaching 16 units or being paid 15 units because of contractual problems to interpret? Is there anything in the works, or is it just a movie?
I don't know of anything that's planned at this stage.
Get a representative reply.
The problems are not contractual. The problems are with the state of California pays people 1.0 time base. 15 units is 1.0 time base, where it has been waived. But it, so it's not a contractual issue. It is an issue with payroll. It's with the state controller is the problem. And whereas a few campuses a number of years ago negotiated a waiver of some kind that I'm not aware of, those waivers, as far as I understand, are no longer being allowed. We have done the last time CFA brought it up on this campus, we were told that they were not going to do it. And at this point, my understanding is they can't as a result of a decision in the chancellor's office. If I'm incorrect, I'm sure the president can correct me.
That's correct.
But the initial problem is with the way the state payroll says nobody gets paid more than 1.8. That's your job, and that's where the issue arises.
Thank you. All right. Any further questions for the provost? Okay, we'll move on to Chairman Purser's report.
Hello, everybody. Structure and Functions this week did not have any appointments to be approved, so there's really nothing the Senate to act on in our business for this week. However, we have received a proposal from the Sustainability Work Group that some of you may be familiar with. They have proposed establishing some more permanent structure for their existence because they are a fairly ad hoc group.
Any questions for Chair Purser? So let's go on to our second business item, which is the resolution that was at your place from the Academic Planning Committee on endorsement of the CSU San Bernardino resolution. Senator Estrada.
Thank you, Chair Blanche. I have been charged by committee to bring to the Senate a resolution encouraging this body to support the resolution of the CSU San Bernardino campus, which has called for the suspension of the CSU online initiative. I refer you to the attached document for the resolution. It's a very well-crafted resolution by CSU San Bernardino. I think they lay out very clearly what the issues are with regards to faculty workload, curriculum, ownership, those kinds of things. I would refer you to the six whereas clause, would be one of the most substantive in relationship to faculty and faculty's control of curriculum. And by unanimous vote, the APTC committee, we endorsed this resolution, and I now bring it to your attention.
So as with all business items before the Senate, this is required two readings, so this is a first reading of this resolution to endorse. Senator Lutman.
A few weeks ago, we heard a presentation by Dr. David Thornburgh, which proved, if nothing else, that there's a great deal happening in the e-world. I certainly share my colleagues' concerns that we not go pell-mell down the road of putting everything online. At the same time, if we have to be careful, I think, about feeding into stereotypes about us being in a centuries-old rut. So I think that we have to be careful we don't just condemn anything that has the word online in it, because there may be some things that we could do that would satisfy our professional concerns and yet at the same time deal with a lot of new developments in the modern world.
Secretary Reese.
The CSU San Bernardino resolution calls for suspension until at least 80% of the campus senate approve the basic issues involved in such initiative has been completed. And I don't understand what that even means. I'm a little reluctant to want to endorse this resolution, the ABC 123, its own resolution, supporting sort of the nature of this, and our concerns, perhaps, about CSU Online, and I think we'll have to hear about that. And I also would echo and second Senator Lutman's comments as well.
Senator Roberts.
Thank you. Just a little bit about the other thing about what ABC is doing. I just wanted to hopefully alleviate your fears that the next thing that we will be bringing to you is a policy on online education. We're one of the few CSUs, I think one of either two or three, that did not have a policy on online education. Being a strong supporter of teaching online. Just want to let you know that that's coming.
Senator Sanders.
I also, like Senator Lease, I'm a little bit concerned about the actual language. Things like the 80% of the issues seems highly problematic. Did ABC consider developing an SSU resolution that doesn't necessarily have to say all these same things, but could say what we're concerned about, so that at least it might have been a position but not caught in the, like they said. Because I think that as it is, I have some reservations about supporting it in its current form.
Senator Scott.
I would refer the faculty that have raised issues about what are the issues to, whereas clause number six, the issues are, I think, very succinctly and clearly laid out. These are the issues that the resolution, the resolution is referring to with respect to having 80% of the faculty senate in the CSU system, endorse the initiative once those issues have been addressed in collaboration with faculty. I think that's one of the main issues of faculty people on San Bernardino campus as well as other campuses and at the statewide academic senate, is that this initiative is going forward without the participation and consultation of faculty on these very important issues that are spoken of in the whereas clause.
Statewide Senator Nelson. Senator Watershed.
Yes, one of the 2 points was just addressed by Senator David Estrada. The other point that I wanted to make is that I do understand that that there is a different response to the online future that we are facing, depending on where we are coming from with regard to disciplines. I don't see any problems in mathematics or in the School of Science and Technology or in the business school for online teaching. I do see a problem in the social sciences, the humanities,
political sciences, where online speech, if monitored and regulated, will bring a different quality to education than a speech that is. And so for that reason, until these issues that are being spelled out in the six grant talks are not sufficiently resolved, I see no problem to endorse that resolution.
Senator Brandt. Getting back to Senator Lisa's point, I think the first resolve clause is not that it's unclear what the basic issues are. I think I'm not an English professor, but something seriously wrong with the grammar. The sentence says, until at least 80% of the campus has heard the basic issues, all of such initiative has been completed. It's just not a well-written sentence. There's nothing wrong with the grammar. And so I don't think we should adopt a resolution that it has a wording that we would not ourselves write. Mm-hmm. I would recommend that we write our own resolution, and it can be much more succinct than this, I believe. Also, but another issue, I want to remind everyone that each campus was forced to contribute $50,000 to this effort. That's over $1 million. This resolution doesn't say what to do with that $1 million while we're waiting for this 80% approval to happen. I think our own resolution should call for a return of that money until that time, so that we can offer more classes in the spring. So I'd like to see us adopt a stronger resolution with good grammar.
Senator Steve Wilson.
Yeah, the whole thing about 80%, you know, when did you 80%? You know, you say, well, anybody can figure 80% of the campuses. Well, then why didn't they? You know, I would feel much more comfortable if they came up with a number. Because does the 80% include Maritime Academy? It is online instruction and issue at the Maritime Academy. That would make a difference between whether it would require 17 or 18 campuses. And I think that should be made more clear.
Senator Burke.
Thank you. I found this discussion extremely useful. A good part of it I agree with greatly within the context of a second reading, but we are in the first reading, aren't we? I believe in, and so it's issues of clarification. I understood to be our principal concern.
Well, it's clarification, suggestions for improvements, major objections. Yeah, that's okay. Any further comments as the end of my speaker's list? Okay, so this will be back next time as a second reading. Thank you. All right, we're on to, let's see, Vice President Flaherty, would you like to make a report?
Yes, thank you, Ben. Just one item, along with Andrew, I have two searches also to announce that I'll be coming to the Executive Committee to seek faculty input. The first is the Chief Information Officer. We'd like to do that search in the spring. And the second is the Chief of Police. So we'll have two of those rolling in the spring. And that's all. That's it.
Questions for Vice President Clara? Senator Bass?
Who was the Chief Information Officer? Is this a business or is this a...
Sam Scalise retired, and Jason Winter has been serving as interim.
Oh, I see.
No more questions? All right. Vice President Lopez Phillips, would you like to make a quiet report?
Yes, unlike my colleagues, I've actually completed a search. I actually just hired a new career service specialist, so I'm very pleased to announce that to the campus community, and thank you for all your support. Anya Bergman will be joining us soon, and she has 10 years of experience, and we have a very strong candidate pool. We had over 22 applications. We had four very, very qualified folks. It was actually difficult picking the person that would be best. I think that's great for our students and for our community to have that resource back. That's the only good news that I have to share.
Any bad news you want to
share? Cool.
Any questions for Vice President Lopez Phillips? Senator Roxburgh?
Multicultural Center search going in such a way that how many, do you feel like you're getting a good number of applications?
As of Monday, we had over 22 applications for that search, and for the orientation / judicial affairs search, we had over 19 on Monday. The Multicultural Center group is actually with its meeting from 2 to 3 today.
Okay.
until that's on its way and moving forward.
Senator Hessel.
24 now.
24 now, she says.
Oh, excellent.
Any more questions? Okay. Let's see. Associate Students Executive VP Ramey. You have a long title.
So as we heard from the provost already today, there will be a 16-unit cap in the spring. That got rolled out to the students late last week for the most part. And so we are struggling to get the word out. Please, we are asking your help in getting the word out to students in your classrooms, to your advisees. Please make sure, we need your help to make sure the students know that 16 units is all we're going to be afforded in the spring. That's a huge change. It's a tremendous change to a lot of our academic career plans. We would really love your assistance, and for any students who are concerned over the change, please send them our way. There will be a very, we are anticipating a very spirited discussion on Tuesday night in our Senate meeting. There are a lot of students who are very upset over the change and the tardiness of the information. On a more positive note, JUMP is sending its first alternative break group out. The group leaves this afternoon. They'll be gone over the weekend to San Francisco for an eco trip to San Francisco. This is kind of a precursor to the alternative spring breaks that's happening over the spring break in the next semester. Usually, JUMP puts on one alternative spring break. This year, we're doing three. There will be one to Alabama, that will be tornado relief, one to Tennessee, which will be environmental and social justice, and one to Portland, Oregon, that's the hunger and homelessness trip. We're very excited about the success of the programs over the last several years. They're booming, and we're very excited to offer three for the first time, and students are already excited. There's been programming and fundraising for students, for any of your students who are interested in community service and social justice. Please come to the student union and send them to the student union and have them visit the JUMP office. We're very excited for these trips. They've been hugely successful so far.
Questions for Vice President Ramey? Senator Shannon.
I also want to acknowledge you for that wonderful programming that's coming out of the hunger and homelessness. That's very important, and certainly students in my class will get credit if they want to participate in that. So it's a wonderful addition to some of our curricular as well. I hope on the first issue you mentioned that in addition to providing a forum for those students who are unhappy about the limitation, there won't be prejudgment on your part, that it will also be welcoming to those students for whom this means they'll be able to graduate in 4 years, because 16 units is sufficient to do that, so that perhaps we won't see quite as many students where we have 20 units that they really can't handle successfully, and other students with 9 units. So I just hope that you'll be willing to take a balanced approach, and considering that change is always hard.
Senator Brown.
Actually, 16 units sounds good, but as you probably know, a lot of students are going to get stuck with 14 units because they'll be at 14, they can't add 3 or they can't add 4. So, or they'll be at 13 and they can't add 4. So the reality is a lot of students are going to come in short of 16, which means they're not going to graduate on time. They're either going to have to pay extra money to take summer school, or they're going to have to stay an extra semester. So you have a right to be upset.
Any more questions?
Could I respond? I think Senator Shannon, you bring up a great point in saying that while this is certainly a challenge to students, it's done as an equalizing, it's trying to equalize the playing field a little bit. And as students in student government who have been around and get to hear the whole story and understand the process. That makes it especially challenging for us to try to explain to students who are all of a sudden their graduation plans for two semesters from now have just been and so again, another great reason to please send them our way. We're hoping that Tuesday night will be an educational session as well as kind of a venting session. And I think students don't hate 16 units as a cap offhand. It's that it came so late. It's impossible to plan when the rules are changing constantly. And I understand the university is under different constraints and that has their own set of challenges, but if there's one thing we could plea, it would be consistency. And I know that goes all the way to the top, but...
Senator Thigpen.
I'm just curious, will the students not be able to petition if they have, you know, they're graduating and they have the representative of the class? Do you know what I mean? Like, are there not going to be some gray area for those students to be 16 or 17 or 18? I would imagine it would be that.
If they graduate, they get 26.
Senator Watt.
No, I'm saying.
I imagine that if your discipline's 4-year plan has 17 units in a particular semester, that's also cause for petition as well. There's lots of opportunities for petition. All right, any more questions for Vice President Ramey? Thanks. Okay, so statewide Senator Wilson, would you like to make a report?
Sure. Thanks to Laurel for sending out the report over the email. Just I'll highlight a few of the things with these ongoing topics with regard to the transfer degree, 16 approved majors. There are certain high unit majors that are looking to change their program so that they could be part of this engineering and nursing. I have to change my goggles, excuse me. There was a problem that was mentioned at the Senate meeting that even though the transfer degree guarantees admission to a CSU, but many programs or even campuses are impacted. So they haven't quite figured out what to do about that. There will be eventually a CSU degree database, and they showed us a beta version of that, which is pretty cool, actually, where you can search any field or major and see which campuses are offering those programs. It's called the Data Dashboard. Another ongoing topic is the Early Start program. One thing to mention is that the CSU English Council passed a two position statements opposing the mandatory Early Start program, the last of which resolved that English Council would not participate in the implementation of a policy it considers deeply flawed, misguided, and discriminatory. And then the CSU online is a very hot topic. The San Bernardino cease and desist resolution calls for 19 campuses to buy in before continuance. This resolution is not about recalcitrant faculty opposed to innovation. It is about engaging faculty in their necessary and appropriate roles with respect to curriculum development and delivery. That resolution was passed by San Bernardino, but things are still moving forward. A director search has been concluded, and a recommendation has been made, and that director will be announced pretty soon. I think it's going to be a female because they slip and use, so you have to pay attention to your pronouns. Because at one point they said her. Catherine sent out the information about the webinar concerning the CSU online initiative that will take place on November 16th. And the format will consist of a lot of questions. We could send out those questions too if people are interested. It's a big long list of questions, many of the questions people have already asked here today that will be asked to this new board that's being run by President Malti. You may know him from Fresno. the committee that I'm on down there, the Academic Affairs Committee, meanwhile, is working on a white paper about online learning, and you can, if you look on my report, you can see all the seven different chapters that will constitute that white paper. We had a teleconference with President Malti, Fresno. He is chairing the 12-member CSU Online Initiative Board, which includes four presidents and two faculty. Jody Ullman, who is the author of that San Bernardino resolution, and Otto Benavides from Fresno. There are 12 people all together. The goal is to provide access for the workforce. It's not necessarily conceived at the 24th campus. You can read my whole report, but I think the number one response that President Malti gave was, "I can't answer that question right now." And that's not a criticism of his. It's because you're at the early stage of things, and people have more questions than answers at this point. But things are moving forward, and it's also anticipated that a broader-based advisory committee will be formed that will advise the director of the online initiative. That will likely include more faculty as well. And then the statewide Senate, did we pass this resolution, Kevin? Or is it just a first reading? The faculty role and campus participation in the CSU online initiative. We passed it. That resolution followed this exchange. Comes in the wake of the San Bernardino resolution. Other topics that were discussed at the three-day meetings down there were the fact that there are five presidential vacancies. Searches at Fullerton and Northridge have begun. It was reported that the Northridge presidential search was going to be closed with no campus visitation, but then I heard that was falsely reported, so I don't know about it. I can't say for certain. Now, I don't know if that's true, but there was an article in the newspaper. I gave you the link there. But then I heard later that it wasn't true. There's information on the budget there, but I think the President Armagnan already mentioned that. It's all about triggers and other horses. will likely be pulled and more information about that. We passed some resolutions. Copies of these resolutions can be found on the website. I gave you the link there. I think some of these I mentioned a while ago when they were in first reading. One has to do with helping people in the junior colleges in the field of nursing transfer more easily in terms of taking the right GE package and preparatory courses. There was a resolution regarding restoring quality at the CSU, and you know, mentions linking that towards the master plan. There was a resolution about public access to and continued collection of intersegmental education data that voices support for data drive decision making and commends efforts to preserve the CPEC housed data. That website is going to be dissolved and We passed a resolution entitled Public Perception and Presidential Compensation in the CSU. It urges the board to establish transparent guidelines that will help the public understand how compensation decisions are made. We passed a resolution entitled CSU Board of Trustees Proposed Fourth Budget for 2012-13. The president talked about. And we passed a resolution titled Providing Advice and Guidance to the Development of CSU Professional Doctorate and ED Program. And that recommends that existing committees, the Academic Affairs and the APEP, provide oversight for those degrees. And we passed a resolution called Faculty Role and Campus Participation in the CSU Online Initiative. I talked about that one. And then a couple of resolutions introduced that will come back in January. Recognizing continuation of integration and sustainability and CSU academic endeavors that commends both students, faculty, and staff in these areas. And then the very important one, which maybe Catherine wants to speak about, early faculty involvement in CSU initiatives, expresses concerns about recent curricular initiatives that have moved forward without appropriate faculty involvement. Did you have anything to add?
Yeah, a couple things.
Back to
that resolution in just a second. Chancellor Lee told us that they're likely to request an additional $100 a year fee increase from students in the budget. The next budget, with an additional request that the state legislature buy out the increase to $238 million. Staying on the budget topic, the statewide senate does not know, Chairman Porter, they don't know where they have enough money in the budget to provide assigned time for senators for next semester. And we're supposed to find out about that sometime in December. And as I've said before, if sometimes it's not available, I will not continue to serve. With regard to the CSU Online Initiative, the CFA representative, John Travis from Humboldt, told us the CFA had concerns about the online initiative for two reasons. One was the possible auxiliary status or nonprofit status, which might impact the protection of the learning. And also the potential for CSU to move the CSU more into privatization of public education, which we've talked about in a lot of different ways having some consequences. With regards to the resolution on the online or early faculty involvement in CSU initiatives, this does get back to CSU Online. I'm on the called Faculty Affairs Committee, it's part of the one of the And the CSU Center Review Resolution spurred a very wide-ranging conversation about four or five major academic initiatives that have happened in the last 2 or 3 years from the administration with very little or no faculty consultation. And there is a great deal of dissatisfaction in the statewide Senate across a lot of different viewpoints because of that. And we had a wide-ranging discussion, not only in our committee, but we had a larger meeting with the executive committee of the statewide Senate and any senators that wanted to come. There was something like, I was told, about 36 people in the room, 53 members of the statewide Senate. And as far as I can tell, it was pretty much unanimous agreement that there's a problem. It's what can we do about it, if anything? And a variety of options were mentioned, yet another resolution, which this early faculty involvement in CSU initiatives is, expressing very serious concern about, again, recent curricular initiatives and moving forward without consultation. But we literally had suggestions of everything from voting on confidence to a petition to campus senate to pass the resolutions. The faculty affairs committee is going to be pursuing that conversation in the coming week in our December interim meeting and our January cluttering. And I'm well aware that academic senates pretty much have as much power as presidents want to give them. in a lot of ways, and that is ever more true for the statewide academic senate. There are a lot of people that are very concerned about criticizing the chancellor too much because they think that our access to information or access or our funding, such as it is, something like $800,000 out of a $2 billion budget, or on the data, I guess, I don't know, that will be threatened. And there, again, the conversation has been wide-ranging, and I'm just so you know, I'm of the mind, I'm past the point where the chancellor's threat to our budget is my concern. I am very, very deeply, not only with a conservative disappointed that things have been going on that they have the last few years. And I am going to be participating in writing the, revising the first draft of the early faculty involvement resolution. And I hope we'll continue this kind of conversation. There's still a number that this is happening, and I don't know what's going to happen. I have no idea what's going to happen. I'm going to persevere. Thank you very much.
Questions for our statewide senators?
Well, just along those same lines, just as a point of information, I was shocked to learn that that a resolution, the early faculty involvement resolution, a similar resolution, the statewide senate passed in
2007. Senator Rossford. Just as somebody who's a little newer to all these. Can you give me some examples of what these top-down academic initiatives have been in addition to the online?
SB 1440, CSU online, Early Start. Those are the three that are coming to mind. There are two others.
2220.
That was part of it. No, just in the last couple of years. I'm sorry, those are the three major ones that we're talking about.
Okay. Any other questions for the statewide senator? Senator Kabas.
You mentioned there are five presidential searches, and I was wondering if I recall he had a resolution dealing with a decision that the presidential candidates would not visit campuses. Do you know how?
That language was cleaned up, and it allows for presidential candidates to make visitations during part of their search process.
The trustees changed the language of the new, the revised presidential search policy to say that the campus advisory committee will be consulted before a decision about the committee is being made. That's the end result of all that work.
Any more questions for the statewide senators? So, some standing committee reports. Senator Estrada for ATC.
Yes, thank you. Our committee is taking up three major initiatives, one of which I thought we had already taken care of, but now it's going to be our committee. The first being the CSU online initiative resolutions and issue about that particular initiative moving forward. So, we will take that back to committee and go. Our own new resolution based on that. The second is to revise the 1996 Memorandum of Understanding between the Sonoma State University and the School of Extended Ed. So we'll be taking up that one at our next meeting. And the third major initiative is to develop an SSU online course provision policy. We'll be drafting that and taking consultation with other faculty committees, mostly the EDC to start with, and then bring that out to the wider university committee for consultation. We'll be modeling that off after some of the other online course provision policies at other campuses. This will be ongoing work of the committee. Thank you.
Questions for APC Chair Estrada? Senator Wilson.
I just wanted to mention that on this campus, it's not a policy, but our School of Extended Ed has a developed a very nice, I don't know if you've seen it, online policy. And our Dean Merrickville is very well versed in online education.
Yes, Dean Merrickville is the administrator assigned to work with the committee on the policy. Okay, EPC Chair Galinsky had to leave at 4 and said he had no report. So, let's see, Faculty Standards and Affairs, Senator Sands.
We met today with members from the University RTP Committee, Subcommittee, as we move forward on rewriting the sabbatical policy to make it comply with the contract and to also clarify the routing process for sabbaticals, and we'll be doing the same for the DIPs soon, so you should be seeing something come before the Senate this, probably early next semester. We also started looking at some of the feedback we were getting about how studies have been being used and what people want for us to be considering as we open those up again. I encourage you once again to contact your FSAC representatives or myself if you want to add more in there. Right now, we actually could use some help as we dig into the history of how did the current ones actually get set up and what conversations went on back then, so we understand it. So if anybody was involved in that process many years ago or knows somebody who's available who was, then I'd love to get some of those names so we could talk with them. And then I guess I would also like to respond to the question that came up earlier about the free speech permits. Last year, the Academic Freedom Subcommittee did indeed have long conversations with Dan Condren and others in the administration and worked through what we had an understanding was now mostly a notification process rather than an approval prior restraint possible situation. So unless that form looks different from what we saw last spring, I don't think we have reason for concern, but I'll check in with AFS, check in with Dan Condren and others to make sure that nothing's changed. But I didn't think that that was problematic. So just hoping to allay some concern. So, but they did consult us, absolutely, those conversations. we raised that one. So.
Questions for FSAC Chair? Okay, Student Affairs Committee, Senator Madotti.
Thank you.
Right. CFA Representative. Anybody have any questions for Student Affairs Committee? All right, CFA Representative.
Okay, a couple of things. It has come to our attention that there is talk of, or maybe it actually has happened, in changing who pays for insurance for international travel. Larry's shaking his head. I hope he's correct about Sonoma State. Other campuses, it has come up that because they've increased the travel insurance for international travel. Is that correct?
I don't know if they increased it any, but if they did, we'd pay for it centrally.
Yeah, okay, good. Thank you, because at least on some campuses, they were reporting that the faculty would now have to find yet another way to help us out. Okay, the other issue has to do with a bargaining update. We have continued to bargain since I was here last. We have scheduled bargaining with CSU management for the 18th of November. They wanted to go on the 17th and 18th. Most of our bargaining team was unable to be in Sacramento on the 17th. But they also further scheduled two-day sessions in the second and third week of December. So we continue to hold out the hope that we will move from relatively minor but not insignificant issues talk about the major issues that seem to divide the faculty and management in getting this contract, which is now 17 months overdue, concluded.
All right, questions for
CFA. Representative Merrifield? All right. So, Senator Major, would you like to give a staff report?
Based on collaboration with Martin Purser, thank you very much for this idea. I've started to visit various areas of the campus to see what goes on behind the scenes, the things that our staff members do that we really don't hear about very much. Today, I visited facilities management and had a conversation with Christopher Dino. He was very informative about what goes on in facilities management. And I just wanted to share a couple of interesting little tidbits that I have no idea about. The campus is 269 acres, and the members of the trades, from landscaping to janitorial service, maintain the entire campus quietly and excellently. The other thing that I found fascinating was that we do all our own water here. We have three water wells, and it provides all the water for this campus, including all residential. Get any water from the park, which I thought was amazing. Thank you to our own chlorination and testing. So it came to me as we were discussing this that we are really a little city, and we do a lot here. The other thing that he was talking about with me and recycling efforts, we do 52% of our trash. Which is, he said, was kind of a record for the CFTUs. He also said that the least complaints among staff members in the facility management, there's no mistake compared to the other CFTUs. But back to the recycle efforts. You know, today we walked around and looked at just different areas of the corporate yard. One area I was looking at was they have all these trees that have been cut down and sawed into logs, and then they have this huge wood chip pile, and then they have a huge recycled container full of yard debris, and they mix that up and make it into mulch. So they're trying to reuse just about everything on campus. He says that they, in construction, they reuse metal and wood, and any, they're not supposed to leave any side debris in any construction project. So they bring it back to the corporate yard, and then he takes the advice of the crew members about how to reuse things. He's always open to their suggestions for improving things on campus, or if they see things on campus that need attention. So anyway, I was fascinated to find out they have a great website. I didn't know about it. So if you just go to www.sonoma.edu/fm, it gives you a really great overall picture, including their mission. So I would suggest you take a look at it. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Any questions for staff representative Major? Any items for the good of the order? Well, we're trying to keep you awake, but yes, we're trying to get the heat up a little bit next time. All right, thank you all.